now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Meshiril Manyfeathers. Meshiril Manyfeathers is a medicine carrier, shamanic healing guide, herbal physician, love catalyst, way shower, parapsychologist, metaphysician, truth seeker, mystic, and seer, president of the Love and Unity Foundation, and minister director for the Universal Brotherhood Movement. Meshiril Manyfeathers is a claircognizant, clairsentient, clairaudient, clairvoyant, and seer of truth from birth. Meshiril's journey began as that of the reluctant mystic. While she remembered her life purpose was that of being in service to humanity, and from the age of 2 knew she wanted to be a doctor to help assist people to be well, it would take many years of emotional pain from traumatic childhood abuse and frequent bouts of deep depression during childhood and adolescence before Meshiril was guided to her native Canadian mentor to begin healing the wounds of not just her current life, but other lifetimes and ancestral trauma as well. Through the gift of deep introspection and self-honesty and a desire to live from her authentic self, the wounds of the past began to release and layers of the old self began to shrivel and die as her true self began to emerge, a process that was amplified as she was taken into repeated shamanic death experiences, also called the dark night of the soul or spiritual emergence, which sometimes lasted for months at a time and seemed never-ending. Dr. Meshiril Manyfeathers' website is meshirilmanyfeathers.net, and we will provide all of her website information on our dedicated YouTube channel as well as on our cosmicswitchboard.com website. So without any further ado, Dr. Meshiril Manyfeathers, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks, James, and thanks very much for having me on here. I'm really honored.
The honor is all ours. Myself and my partner, Kylie, were at the Byron Bay Close Encounters Conference, and we were just really taken, actually, quite frankly, blown away by your presentation. Fortunately, as fate would have it, we were sitting in the exhibition room when you gave your presentation, one of the few times Kylie and I had the opportunity to actually sit there at the table and you know, talk about our work and share and interact with people. And then the lecture started, you came on, and we just sat there in rapt attention, and we just knew we had to get you on the show. Please tell us how your journey began and what brought you to this point.
Well, it's been a long and a difficult journey, I have to say. But like most people, awareness of being watched and being attacked began in childhood. I also knew that I was put with the wrong parents or the wrong family shortly after conception. I've done a regression to the womb and heard my mother's response to finding out she was pregnant when she was 46, which was devastating in the late 50s. And I knew then that this wasn't the family that I was intended to be with, because I was ultimately put with a very abusive family on purpose with a pedophile son who, you know, molested me from when I was 18 months of age. So it went downhill from there, I guess you'd say. At age 8, I wondered why I was here with these parents now and not somewhere else with other parents who would obviously love me more than those did. But my childhood as a whole is a relatively black hole, except for certain mostly traumatic moments, as I discovered when I was learning neurolinguistic programming. I've lifted a lot of that blackness, but there is still a lot of mostly, you know, I don't remember a lot of what went on. But I had a recurring dream when I was, I don't know, around 5 or 6. I was put in boarding school when I was 5, but the recurring dream, two significant ones. One was about spaceships in formation around the planet, and I didn't know anything about ETs or spaceships that I knew of, but I had this recurring dream. And actually your talk at the conference brought up the memory of having been abducted from when I was 4. I believe it was Zeta Grays, but, you know, that could be a trick of the mind, I don't know. But I was definitely, I've been abducted many times, once that I, you know, have full memory of later in life. But I also had a recurring dream during my boarding school nights of a man dressed in black chasing me and running down the street across the road from the boarding school, which was outside the church. And I assumed later when I had the, you know, recall of that, that it was probably my brother, but, you know, it could have been Men in Black. You know, I don't know for sure, but I definitely had that recurring dream. And also significant, I think, in this was I didn't want to be in boarding school, obviously. I got every known measles so I could stay home and had a whole term off school in somewhere in between kindergarten and grade one. And I had my mum says I had a really high fever and I was delirious, but I know it was real. I saw spiders all over my bedroom wall. And I know other people that have been in the child MyLab programs have described robotic spiders, watching them. I thought they were real spiders. I don't know for sure, but I knew they were real. I knew they weren't from this planet. I knew they were alien of some kind, and I've always had a unnatural fear of spiders. Traumatic abuse on every level, you know, physical, mental, emotional, psychological, and sexual as well. You know, I grew up being aware of people stealing my energy and feeling very threatened around me because I had the gift of sight and knowing where people were lying. I heard something interesting recently that children that are raped before the age of 5, and this pertains particularly to the MyLab child programs, that it's done very specifically on purpose to shatter the consciousness and causes the Kundalini serpent to rise suddenly to the base of the spine and shatter the consciousness. I know from my NLP training that my consciousness was shattered, and I'm not saying that I was part of the MyLab programs or anything, but I know that that happened as a result of sexual experiences long before I was 5. Typically that's part of programming, you know, to compartmentalize different personalities. Probably some of my family would have said I had a split personality. When I went to Canada was when things really changed. I don't remember a lot of psychic attacks when I was a child. I knew that I was being watched, but I really felt that it was ET related, not human related. When I was older, I've seen myself on spaceship on a big screen with ET standing around talking about me. You know, I wouldn't have known why. I didn't know why at the time, but I know that I've always been watched. But it was when I reconnected, we definitely had past life connections, but when I connected with my mentor and energy medicine teacher, that things really changed then. She opened me up through regressions, crystal healing, and I started to remember who I was, and that's when things got really interesting, you know, you might say. I really was psychically attacked every time I had initiations, and I did Reiki. So every time I had a Reiki initiation, I was psychically attacked. I had the meditation with a crystal it was about 91, I think, and through the crystal, a message came that I was an Andromedan. And it was not long after that that I had contact with a spaceship on the way from Vancouver to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I knew that the beings that were contacting that were on the spaceship were Andromedan. What I saw was iridescent blue filaments coming into the crown of my head, and I knew later that they had reconnected all 10 of my DNA strands, so I had all 12 intact, and that definitely created a shift in consciousness for me. On the way back from Santa Fe, I had to stop at Mount Shasta, and it was there that I was abducted and taken inside the mountain for 3 days. I don't remember exactly what they did, but I was told afterwards that they had worked on me for 3 days. I don't believe that it was necessarily in my best interest, but I think any abduction is not for our highest good. It's somebody's agenda. But it was then that I started to get contacted by ascended masters. So shortly after that, I had my first physical ascension initiation, and my ascension name was Melchizedek, coincidentally. Although I didn't know anything about Melchizedek, I, you know, was indoctrinated into the name and Sunday Mass, the Melchizedek priesthood, that was really all I knew about him. But Mount Shasta, I had a voice that started talking to me. So when Melchizedek showed up, then he started talking to me, you know, wake me up at 4 o'clock in the morning sometimes to give me information. I once asked him, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am you," meaning that he was my monadic self. And I'd just like to say that monads and infinite selves and the different levels of the soul only exist in the astral matrix reality. They don't exist in the true light. Shortly after that, Kuan Yin and Sananda also showed up, and Sananda always felt like he was over my shoulder. Sananda, for anyone who doesn't know, is supposedly Jesus in his life as incarnated as Jesus. It was very nice for my ego, the things that they told me. They said that I was chosen, that I was part of the Council of Light, that they were aspects of my higher self. Later, I was told that I was a double walk-in, and I was operating through three monads. Each one of them were the three monads. I may or may not be a walk-in, but, you know, I have my doubts about that as well. Basically, the psychic and spiritual warfare has been going on really all my life. It's been just as bad from the false light as it's been from the dark. And I think, you know, because people don't realize that so-called ascended masters and angels and archangels and probably 90% of the ETs and brotherhoods and, you know, federations, that they're all part of the same system, that they're not of the light. They are just shapeshifters or, you know, the holographic projections of the reptilians, and they're all the same. We exist in a holographic reality. I think, you know, all your listeners would know that, you know that, and that it's being created from Saturn, as far as many say. Saturn creates the time matrix, and the moon amplifies it. There's a lot of people that say that. The rings of Saturn, it's interesting that's the one ring that rules them all. And actually there are many rings of different colours around the planet creating this astral reality, that what the reptilians say is that it doesn't matter whether it's Christianity or spirituality or Hinduism or Buddhism or atheism or Scientology, if you're magnetically drawn to one of them, we've got you. And so, you know, when people die, they go into the astral plane. They don't actually go to the true light. And I think virtually no one knows that. You know, people think that we live in a free will universe. We don't. Outside of this reality is the free will universe, but certainly this matrix reality we live in isn't that. Did you have a question?
Yeah, that's you know, very profound, because I just was having an interesting conversation last night with a friend, and we had come pretty much to the same conclusion that the way this matrix simulation is set up, that each of the religions provides a cultural preconceived bias to the person who is going to pass away, and So like a Buddhist can expect to go to a Buddhist type place in heaven, quote unquote. A Catholic, somewhat of Hindu faith, they will have this kind of reality that's created for them where they pass on and wind up in a Hindu-type heavenly place. But it's not going to be complete. It's not going to be really connected to Source. It'll be kind of a simulation like this, only at another level. And eventually, if the soul harvesting, soul recyclement agenda and process is not dismantled, eventually these people may wind up, these souls may wind up reincarnating to even a denser Earth, if that's possible. Now, when did you start to realize that some of these ascended masters were not all they were cracked up to be? Was it like a gradual process of realization, or was there something or a couple of things that were so jarring to your inner core that you said, wait a minute, something smells rotten here?
It was actually fairly early on, because I started teaching Reiki not long after I became a Reiki master. Not even the word master is suspect. It's part of hierarchy. And I know within my being that there's no such thing as hierarchy in the higher dimensions. And yet, you know, all these beings that people are channeling call themselves master this. And, you know, anyway, some of my students started reporting that they were part of meditation groups, and I'll tell you one in particular that really stands out. She was part of this meditation group. The man who was running it said he was a highly evolved soul, and I think, you know, why would you even say that? If it's true, you don't talk about it, right?
Yes.
So anyway, she noticed that there was reptilians. She could see reptilians at the meditation. And I have to say that that's another thing that was sus, I suppose is the word for me, that every meditation group, or like I actually I sponsored a channel to Vancouver, and there were definitely a lot of reptilians at every one of his talks. You know, I was attacked by reptilians. I did exorcisms on people with reptilians. I mean, it's all about the reptilians. There's no question about that. And there's two groups, which I'll get into later. But this woman started having dreams about the guy that was leading the meditation group, and she was held down and psychically sexually raped. And, you know, she was telling me about this, and I said, look, you know that's not right. You've got to get away from this guy. And I did some exorcism type release on her. And what I thought it was double agents. So these people were, you know, of the light, because supposedly at that time I believed everyone was of the light, and he was just had, you know, dark beings working through him. So I call them double agents. So he was of the light, but he had these dark beings working through him. And I also noticed that I stopped reading channel books, because I noticed that none of it was true, and that was talking so much about the hierarchy, and there was just this stuff that didn't make sense. And I started to realize that the beings that people were channeling were either the dark pretending to be shape-shifting as to all these angels and archangels and ascended masters, or they were just fake. I wasn't sure which at that point, but I knew there was definitely something very wrong with the whole system. I also started to suspect that, because I had memory actually of being Lemurian, a Lemurian high priestess, when the winged ones came disguised, they were reptilians, some of the big ones with wings, came disguised as angels and mated with the priestesses. I knew that they were shapeshifters. So I began to suspect that perhaps the angels that were talked about in the Bible and the Torah were these same beings, so that it was all fake. So it was actually last year that I was strangely guided to Cameron Day. He's written a few articles. One that I was directed to was Why I No Longer Call Myself a Light Worker. And I've never called myself a light worker, because it's all about love. It's not about light, for me anyway. And he talked about the whole thing being fake, and, you know, the archons and it just being part of the same system. And there was just a truth that resonated in that for me. I know the truth when I hear it. You know, it comes through my heart as a knowing, and it put it all into perspective that, yes, this totally makes sense. Everything that I've suspected for the last 20 years is right. So that was the full awakening, but I certainly suspected that it was all make-believe before that. So I stopped channeling anything, well, certainly before I moved to Australia, but just share that the reason why I'm in Australia is I had a life purpose reading done when I was in 97 with a woman who was said to be a very highly evolved walk-in who worked with and channeled many ascended masters and Mother Earth and Arcturians, and she taught a whole healing system using the Arcturians. Well, in the life purpose reading, she said that I was supposed to come back to Australia, this is the place of my birth, and set up an oasis here that would be the first of many healing oases that I would, you know, open around the world. And of course, again, you know, my ego really loved that. Who wouldn't want to be doing their life's purpose, you know, when they've dedicated their whole life to the service of humanity? But the truth was far more sinister than that, and I was really being called here to be poisoned and prevented from not only fully remembering who I am, but, you know, to stop me from doing my work. And I was subsequently poisoned with one of the most toxic chemicals that we have on the planet and bedridden for 18 months. And, you know, it's been a struggle to even be moving since then. So it was relatively successful in what they did. But nevertheless, I have remembered who I am, and you know, I remembered a lot of my past lives, but I remember who I was before all this matrix reality, and that's probably been the greatest wake up and gift for me is to know that there was something in the free will universe before all this existed, and that we are supposed to go there when we die. We're not supposed to go into the matrix, and you know, our souls aren't supposed to be trapped, and that we are supposed to go back to source when we die, and we are supposed to remember between lifetimes.
Now, the memories you have of Lemuria, you mentioned being a high priestess. I've heard similar stories from other people. Could you describe again how the Draco, perhaps in the guise of angels, came in and mated and interfered with the high priestesses of Lemuria? Because when we think of like texts such as the Book of Enoch, right, and you see the illustrations of the Book of Enoch that some kind of tuned in person got a download and they drew from soul memory, I guess, what these angels really looked like. They weren't the angels of that people commonly think of with feathers and whatnot. These Enochian angels look very Draco, look very Drac-like, and so we can see how the interbreeding took place, and this kind of deceitful game has been going on for a long time, and so you have a dual perspective of this. You saw it from the Lemurian high priestess standpoint, and then with the benefit of hindsight, if you will, you saw it from your current incarnation as many feathers. Did you want to comment on that?
The lifetime where the Draco came as disguised as angels came up actually with a student that I had in, I don't know, 2003 or something. I taught her, you know, every modality practically that I have. Ultimately, she was like the daughter of Lucifer. Uh-huh. And I have seen Lucifer, by the way. One of my, you know, I don't know if it's a gift or a curse, but I do see people shapeshift into their true form. And this man who was, you know, supposedly the most wonderful healer when I worked in Byron Bay, shapeshifted into what I got, you know, and the message that I got as a knowing was this is Lucifer, and a grey being who sort of looked a bit like a kangaroo but without ears. And he was talking about Lucifer as well, which sort of went in with that. This woman came as disguised as a student, And in one of our sessions, I knew that there was something really wrong because she started accusing me of working with the dark. And you know, I guess we're all been working with the dark on one level, but I certainly didn't think I was at that point. But she said, you know, that that was a dark spaceship that was channeling energy to me, and I knew it was a projection. And one of the sessions, she had a dark lord came in because she actually had to work on me. She brought a dark lord into the session who put tar inside my body, and this dark lord was a defector. He defected to the light, and I mean, I laughed when she said that inside, but I knew I was in grave danger. I couldn't get off the table because I knew I'd probably actually be dead. So I actually had to go through it, and then I had to, you know, clear the energy that she put in me afterwards. And also in one of our Atlantean crystal meditation, we went into the abyss and she anchored an aspect of my soul there. So I knew this woman was really dangerous and I knew she hated me. So it came up in one of our sessions when I was doing a regression on her that she had been one of the priestesses and she had blamed me for the rape. And I saw the whole thing, you know, she was going through it. I was seeing it from her perspective, but I was one of the high priestesses. And she blamed me for having allowed it to happen. And we didn't have any choice. You know, it happened. They were stronger than us. They were bigger than us. But they did trick the priestesses. They came as illuminated ones. That whole word is really interesting, the Illuminati. It means illuminated ones, enlightened ones. You know, there's no coincidence with all this of the rituals and everything that they perform is all connected with this. So that was part of some of the initial hybrids that were created was in that Lemurian lifetime. That was the understanding that I got. But I've also had a very clear, distinct memory of a long lifetime with the fifth race who were still part of the free will universe. They lived in peace with everything, with the mother. And the mother wasn't just Mother Earth. Mother was the whole universe. And they had 12 elements and they weaved the web. So their level of magic was beyond anything even the Dracos could imagine. And that was something that they coveted. They really wanted that magic, but they've never been able to replicate it. I have a vague memory of it. You know, I know I should be able to still do it, but I can't. But the first hybrids, or some of the first hybrids, came in. They used trickery. They found where the last 120,000 of us were located, and they came in and annihilated everybody who wouldn't just lay down arms and come with them. And they very distinctly sought me out because I've always been a seer. You know, in every major lifetime that I've remembered, I've been sought out because, you know, I am one of the rebels, what I call the rebels. And they knew me by name. They sought me out because they knew that I was going to create trouble. The two people that killed me in that lifetime, I've had lifetimes with again. I've had relationships with them again in this lifetime. I didn't know that that's who they were when I was in relationship with them. I remembered this after. But those fifth race people, we called ourselves the people, they and the dinosaurs, all the large creatures of the planet, held the oneness grid in place around the planet. And we had to be destroyed before the astral grid matrix could be erected. So there was a very specific reason why they had to be taken out, the dinosaurs as well as the fifth race.
You've shared information that corroborates what I've heard from other sources, that the common perception of Lemuria was that it was a enlightened counterpart to Atlantis, and that Atlantis was where a lot of the bad energy, the bad scientists, the bad priesthoods were, in a generic, simplistic sense. And Lemuria was the place where all the enlightened souls had gone to, and that where people kind of lived in harmony there all the time, but from what I've been hearing from people that I trust implicitly, there were some dark elements in Lemuria, and that they held sway there for a long time, kind of sub rosa to the main population and the main priestesses and priesthood that were working on the surface. This Lemurian sub rosa group was heavily into Satanism, heavily into black ceremonial magic. Did you get the sense that your group may have been targeted to become that, or it was an offshoot of that?
A comment about Lemuria from what I know and remember. Lemuria started a long time before Atlantis. The initial beings that came here to, you know, in what we call Lemuria, were, my understanding and my memory is that it started before the fall. You know, if we call the fall when the Matrix grid was erected. Many of us came here to experience more physicalized bodies on planet Earth, but we still had a light body. We weren't completely physical. I had a lifetime in early Lemuria, so before the fall, where I was still very much in a light body. And after the fall, obviously, or, you know, around that time, I had become reincarnated and become part of the system. Obviously, there's always been the two factions, if you want to call it that, of duality was created here as part of this matrix. Duality does not exist in the free will, true light universe. You know, let's be just clear about that. So duality only exists here. So, of course, there's going to be a constant war between the two. So that there always has to be that, you know, has to be that the two sides to be a battle with one another. I think, though, that from my understanding and memory of Lemuria, there were parts of us who tried to stay true to the light, if you want to say that, you know, we tried to maintain good. And I have a really clear memory of another lifetime being one of the priestesses in a really huge temple that was close to the ocean. We had seawater that came up into the temple and around. There was a channel, very large tables. You know, I can see it even now looking at it. And we would call up dolphins to come and sing around the table of the person that was sitting on there, laying on the table to be healed. The dolphins would come up, sing their frequency, and the healing would take place. So we had a really close relationship with dolphins. That's what I was part of. I wasn't part of any of the dark side battles. So I think later Lemuria was where there was a lot more of that. I definitely have lifetime memories of Atlantis, where my father was one of the high up in one of the councils, one of the elders. I was his daughter. We had slaves. That, you know, there was the battles that they had to the death of the part human, part animal creatures that they had created. They used them to create energy to harvest. I, you know, although I was the daughter of one of these obviously quite evil elders, it wasn't my thing. We had slaves. I didn't want to be part of that. My, you know, servant, I used to have him play music. I didn't, you know, make him do anything for me like a slave. So I've got memories of both sides of Atlantis for sure, as well as my very first past life memory was of being a Atlantean healer, probably in the later stages, because one of the things I got in the memory was that I had not reclaimed my power in this lifetime because I was afraid that I would abuse it. Even though I know in my being that I would never abuse power, it was such abused to such a degree in Atlantis that I felt that, you know, I shouldn't take on any power because of the potential of it being abused. But I have to wonder, though, if part of the frequency, I only thought this recently, that part of what they were doing in Atlantis was they were messing with frequency, but there's also a possibility that there were some that were working on a frequency to break down the astral matrix grid, and that it wasn't quite all as bad as what people make out, that there were, my sense is that there was a group that were working to create a frequency to shatter the matrix, and that was also part of the fall of Atlantis.
Yes, there would have been some competition between the various factions, where you had one group that were using crystals and generating enormous power, and they worked without self-restraint, and they were working from a service-to-self perspective and whatever their agenda was. And then you have perhaps the faction that you were a part of or knew about that was trying to utilize frequencies and crystals for the greater good and to forestall any impending or potential catastrophe. I could very well see that. Now, a key part of your story also, Many Feathers, is your Andromedan connection. I've known some people in this incarnation who I am satisfied are Andromedans, and they've had Andromedan lives. They're boots on the ground within their DNA genetic profile and their morphic resonance field. They have a very strong Andromedan component. And one thing I've noticed, and this has been noted by others too, is these Andromedans, they don't fall for a lot of the fake New Age love and light stuff that kind of ensnares a lot of people. They seem to see right through that. Now, in your experiences with the Andromedans, and please, if you don't mind, you know, if you can share, like, the nature of them, have they been telepathic? Have they been in the dreamscape? Have some of them been physical or in a higher dimension? What's some of the information that Andromedans have shared with you as far as this matrix control system is concerned?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Here's the difference between information that comes from the true light, from the free will universe, and all the information that comes through the matrix reality that we're living in. Anything that's channeled, anything that comes as a voice in your head, anything that comes as a feeling, as a, you know, an external sort of thing. And this is one of the things that frustrates me about the light workers and New Agers and spiritualists, that they don't want to hear that what they're channeling is not of the light, you know, not the true light. Somebody actually at the conference said to me, you know, okay, so she respected my opinion, you know, that's because that's all it is. It's just an opinion. It's not truth. And I said, well, but who are you channeling? And she said, oh, it's a part of me. I said, but, you know, what are their names? Oh, you know, they have all different names. And it's like, there's a key part in the fact that it's something outside of you. It's not you. If it's coming as a voice, if you're channeling it, it is definitely part of this system. Any information that I've gotten from the Andromedans has come as a knowing. It's come through my heart, you know, it assimilated with the soul's knowing. It's not intrusive. When I had the actual contact with the Andromedan spaceship, I don't know if you saw the picture that actually turned out it was a bit small, but they actually did an M in the sky. I took a video of the spaceship and probably four or five photographs, and each one of them there is an M. Now imagine how fast they had to have been traveling to do a repeated M for me to take photographs, and they did it long enough for me to take the photographs. They were very tall. I don't know what color they were. I mean, I know some of them are blue and some of them are white. I remember they were very tall. But it came as a knowing. So I knew I had to go to a specific place to meditate. I knew I had to sit down with the person that I was with. I really feel, it's a knowing, it's not a feeling. I know that they've been guiding me my whole life. You know, things that have happened in my life, it's come as a knowing, and it's never been intrusive. Whereas the channelings that I've got from, you know, Melchizedek or Sananda or, you know, any of the archangels, you know, and I've worked with hundreds of archangels, it's been intrusive in the sense that it's come as a voice or a feeling. And the Andromedans are definitely not like that at all. That's what tells me they're genuine.
Well, this is a sink, because the conversation I had last night with a friend was about this very subject, insofar as the impressions one gains from the heart center through source, through organic source, whereas intrusive telepathic thoughts are taken at face value by so many people in the New Age movement and the fake light workers, as I call them. The impressions one gets, which work with the heart center, and you can immediately know whether something is of discordance, of non-truth, of a deceptive nature, and something that is of the truth. It's an inner knowing. It's like the times when I've had, it's beyond telepathic, as you know, Many Feathers. There's impressions you get when you're dealing with another sentient being, where it's often been said, and it's absolutely true, thinking is too slow, it's a construct of this matrix simulation. Telepathy itself is kind of just a step above, you know, thinking and talking, whereas the impressions from a heart-centered sovereign being to another heart-centered sovereign being, whether it's human to human, human to so-called animal, which itself is kind of derogatory towards animals, but the impressions that come back are instantaneous. It's a full-flowered, blossoming knowing of a meaning that works at many different levels and multi-tiered. It's not a simple thing. It's like when someone has a really deep connection with their dog, and it's more than the dog coming up to them and telepathically saying, "I've got to go outside and use the bathroom." It's something deeper than that, and it's instantaneous, and it's something that's felt right in the physical heart. And so that's what differentiates the communication that we have from source, vice the communication that the fake light workers get, because they take everything at face value from these ascended masters. Let me give you an example. I know someone who, very heart-centered person, very well-meaning, well-intentioned person, but they're part of a worldwide network of people who do these phone conferences, and they are all on the phone at the same time to someone who's channeling a higher ascended master, so-called. And it varies. It could be Kuthumi one day. It could be Sananda the other. They even channel Walt Disney, if you can believe that. Yeah. And so what happens is these ascended masters give these people instructions. And the next thing you know, these people from all over the world, they're getting on flights. They're flying all over the place. They're gritting out all these places which the ascended masters asked them to, telling them that it's something that needed to do in order to usher in the ascension, right? And so I'm thinking, geez, you know, you have Walt Disney telling all these people to go all over the world and grid these places. Who's that really benefiting? And why do they have to have it go through the medium of a transmedium to tell them through the phone what to do? And then they follow these instructions to the letter. They get on boat, they rent out coach buses and get driven all over the place, Switzerland, the Middle East, you name it, South America. They go there, they grid these places out. And who are these people really working for is the question.
Well, I think we know who they're working
for. Yeah.
You know, interesting that you bring up about, you know, the ascended masters, so-called ascended masters and so on, telling people to do things. I have to say that very early on, like soon after actually that I was contacted and had all this channeling information coming from Melchizedek, Kuan Yin and Sananda, I had a business partner. We had been in college together, trying to be master herbalists together. And we started being told where to go and what to do. And we both said, you know, it has to work for us. And we stopped listening to it. It's like we knew instantly that, you know, just because they told us we had to go do something, if it didn't work for us, then it wasn't for our highest good. We didn't just give ourselves up to this being. I knew intuitively that if you started listening to somebody telling you what to do, it's disempowering. And that's what this is all about. This is totally about disempowering and giving yourself over to a higher authority. And you know, it's easy to say, oh, well, it's a part of myself. It's just my higher self. But you're disempowered. If you're doing what they're telling you to do, then you're not in your own center. You're not in your own power. And I don't get how people don't see that.
Indeed, because the knowingness that which you spoke of earlier, the impressions one gets, like just a short time ago, I you know, got a message from someone I never knew on Facebook, and you know, just a wave of like energy that came through it. It was like, you know, the person may be well meaning, but they're going through some challenges big time. You know what I mean? So, you know, put the shields up, right? And you know, maybe the person is sincerely in need of help. Maybe they can be helped, right? But I'm not going to go in it with my blinders on because I'm sensitive to energies and the intentions behind it. And the intentions may not come from the individual. It could be through some kind of governing body of ascended masters or entities or, you know, discarnate non-corporeal beings. That's what, in our field, as you know, Many Feathers, it's like, it's not just the person you're dealing with sitting across the table from you or you're interacting with at a conference. It's whatever is working through that person. And I remember the feeling that I got at that conference that you and I attended. It's like, man, there's a lot of hosty people here. There's a lot of people here that have all kinds of discordant energies. And I spoke with a couple of people who attended one lecture. I'm not going to say who was giving this lecture. But they had to leave the lecture because one of them felt that their crown chakra was being attacked, basically impinged upon. And they both were feeling nausea. And they left the place and they repaired back to their own individual hotel rooms. And that night, they were both spiritually attacked. One of them was pretty much attacked all night. The other was attacked for a couple hours until she fought it off using defensive energetic techniques. But the bottom line is they had both attended a person's lecture, and this person marginalizes and discounts any notion of negative entities. In fact, they're really into the game of shaming those who have had negative, traumatic, frightening, painful alien abduction experiences, because this person and this person's followers, they preach the all ETs are good creed, and anyone who reports a negative alien encounter is of necessity spiritually retarded, vibrationally challenged, whatever the euphemism is. And so here we have the spectacle of two people who give this person a chance. Okay, let's see what they're all about, right? And they check out this person's lecture, and then they leave it feeling nauseous, having their crown chakras attacked. They get attacked later on in their hotel rooms. So that's the type of multiple threat environment we're talking about, folks, that these people, well-meaning some of them, ultimately not working from their heart center, because if they were, they'd be able to suss out the nature of the deception. So it's well-intentioned people that are in their headspace that presume to be working for the light, but are being used as vessels and host by these other entities to push this agenda. And it's for no... It's for excellent reason that some refer to the new age as the new cage. Did you want to comment on that, Many Feathers?
Absolutely. The whole new cage, the ascension, the golden cage, as I've heard it called as well. I mean, it's all that's all false hope. I mean, let's face it. This matrix reality has been going on for hundreds of thousands of years. Why are they suddenly going to give it up now? They're not going to, are they? I know you would have read this in the article, but what I really get is that this is an anomaly that happens towards the end of an age, every age, that humanity starts to begin to wake up. Our DNA spontaneously starts to the disconnected DNA strands spontaneously start to reconnect. There are a lot of us that were captured from the free will universe and brought into this matrix reality. So our DNA has been passed on, you know, various, you know, however many lifetimes we've had, we've been spreading that DNA. And that's aside from the fact that of the awakening that happens, you know, the energy comes from the galactic core. As we spiral around the galaxy, we don't just, you know, spin around the Earth. We also, our solar system spins around the galaxy. So, you know, the different cycles there, we're gathering and harnessing the energy through our galaxy. But we also get energy from our sun. And that's specifically what they're trying to stop right now, is many of us that are abducted because they're, you know, they've been trying to get rid of this anomaly forever. This is what I get. They can't, obviously. They can't take out the connection to our soul and our true knowing, that those of us who were captured from the free will universe, they can't disconnect our pineal gland completely. They can't disconnect us from our soul as much as they'd like to. So it doesn't matter how much they manipulate our DNA. And that, you know, the whole thing with the chemtrails, telling everybody to put sunscreen on, it's blocking out the sun, because there is that energy we need from the sun. We have a photosynthesis type reaction to the energy of the sun, the same as plants do. It's not the same, but, you know, a similar kind of photosynthesis that we need to have the sun on our body. Obviously, we need it for hormones and so on, but there's a reason why they're blocking out the sun. You know, children don't go outside anymore, and yet the waking up is happening. You know, and isn't it interesting that all these greys and so on are contacting so-called crystal children? You know, why are they focusing on those children specifically? You know, some of us know that if they're grey, they're obviously not of the light, and I don't know how anybody can possibly say that there's some of them that are good and some of them aren't. No, they're all the same. They all have their own agenda. This love that people are feeling, that children are feeling, is their own love that's being reflected back to them. It's not these beings that are all loving. They're certainly devoid of feeling it at all. I don't have any feelings. And that's true of any of them. You know, if you feel love around one of these ETs, it's your own love that's being reflected back to you. And all this information that they're giving them, it's to make them feel special and make them feel different. It's not that it's anything for humanity's highest good. It's their own agenda, because they are trying to prevent the awakening. If we go back to when all the disasters have happened, you know, ancient civilizations, we don't really know exactly when they've all happened. But I would guarantee that they've happened somewhere around the end of the time when everybody's DNA has been waking up and people have been remembering. The information I get from my family, my Andromedan family, is that they wipe us out and start again when they can no longer control the what I call the anomaly, and that's what they do. An interesting revelation I got back when I knew that. You know, giving up our power and going wherever these beings told us, I had a very specific life or death kind of experience with reptilians in the beginning. You know, it was early in the 90s when I started waking up. And when the Andromedans told me I had to take back control of my mind, you know, and I knew about the mind control from reading Bringers of the Dawn, I think was where it talked about that. And when I did that, and I didn't totally know what I was doing, but, I mean, it happened. I could feel dark energy coming into my crown. I felt the mind control. I stopped that. You know, as soon as I went out of the present moment, I could feel the mind control coming in. So I developed a mantra to come back into myself, for my soul to be fully anchored. And then I had this is actually when all the reptilians and the night attacks started happening, was when I took back control of my mind. I started seeing the entities that everybody has connected to them. People would shapeshift in front of me. I would see their true form. And, you know, and all these beings showed up at night, including a demon that I didn't see but my sons could see, which really made me angry, and that made me get rid of all the entities out of the house. But I had gone to Victoria, British Columbia, which at the time was the satanic capital of North America. I don't know if it still is, but at the time that was what it was considered. And I'd gone with this girlfriend that I was, doing business with, my friend, and we'd gone to stay with her parents, her mother and her stepfather. And her stepfather was in his late 80s, but he was still practicing chiropractic. And she suspected that maybe he was an agent for the dark. But this weekend that we had there, he definitely showed his true colors. She had slept downstairs and had given me her old bedroom, and she came running up. I don't know, it was 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. She told me she'd been held down by these entities. It was obviously terrifying. She came up to me. I didn't know why, but I'd taken sage, smudge, and candles and crystals with me. They surrounded the whole house. I could feel them. I was able to keep them out of the bedroom. We slept with a candle on. I did all my Reiki symbols at all the doors and windows and kept them at bay. But, you know, it was one of the most terrifying experiences I think I've ever had. And it made me two things. It made me look for a way to stop being afraid of the dark, which I did, and I was blessed to have come across a person who showed me how to do a visualization to actually stop being afraid of the dark. And I also had a revelation that the light conceals while the darkness reveals. And that was the words that I got. And if you think about that, we don't see entities typically during the day. They're concealed in the light of day. And they're concealed in the light. And if you think about the false light, that is a very good trick that they're using of concealing themselves in the supposed light. Whereas, you know, we see them in the darkness. And, you know, I mean, it's one of those true, you know, a saying that there's nothing truer that's ever been more true. It's a very devious way that the darkness is really controlling us is through the light, or what we think is the light.
Absolutely. Well, we've reached the end of the first hour. Many Feathers, do you want to tell the listeners what your website is and how they can contact you?
Of course. Thank you. www.mesherilmanyfeathers.net. And that's MESHERIL, Many Feathers. And my email address is drmesheril@mesherilmanyfeathers.net.
Well, we're just getting started here. Many Feathers has much more information to share with us in the second hour. If you like what we do here at the Cosmic Switchboard and believe in what we do, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we will see you at the top of the next hour.